Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Talk.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Happy Monday. I have big news. In exactly 15 minutes, it is officially the start of autumn.
Really?
Yeah, 119 today. It's also my mom's birthday, who also appreciates good grammar.
In 15 minutes?
Maybe.
Was it exactly when she was born?
Yes. Her mother waited for fall.
How neat.
I don't think that's how it worked.
I understand that women can do that, though.
I have a new question for tomorrow for X's and Y's.
Which is what? Just ask you right now.
Can you do that?
Can you decide when you have a baby?
Yeah, to an extent.
Exactly back before C-sections?
To an extent, sure.
Really?
Well, I mean, probably within the amount of maybe minutes, you can push. I'll give you an example. Please. Since you brought it up. Now, I've had four babies. Molly, my last one, when we checked into the hospital on June 10th, that's her birthday. I think we got there before 6 a.m. to get everything all set up or whatever. Not to get too far into the situation. I was 39 weeks in like 5 days or whatever. You cannot be induced before 39 weeks because of really important medical reasons, like the insurance won't cover it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's the case. And I kept saying to my doctor, this is a big freaking baby. This is a large baby. There's no room. Like, I don't even understand the biology of what's taking place right here. And they're like, well, it'll be fine. So the baby was measuring big. She turned out to be 9 pounds, 15 ounces, folks. That's a big baby. I got there before 6 a.m., got everything set up, was dilated. So she was coming at some point or another. But then you get all hooked up to the whatever. Fourth baby, when the doctor saw me for the first time, which might have been in like the 9 a.m. hour, it's probably when he got there to work, he came down, he'd be like, it'd be really great if you could have this baby in the noon hour on my lunch so that I can make sure that I'm here. And I was like, okay. So things are progressing. We get to the noon hour, get into the 12 o'clock hour, and about 12:15, fully dilated, ready to go. And they're like, I think you're ready to push. Let's call the doctor, get the doctor down here. That's how the doctor does it. The nurses do a lot of the work. And the doctor, who has the medical expertise, and I love my OBGYN, they're like, we're going to call him. Let's start pushing by the time he gets here. Because you figure it's going to take a while. How long did Katie push?
It started at like 10 p.m. I think it was.
It was really inconvenient for you because you wanted it during the day.
Yeah,
because
I was like, oh no, I'm going to be so tired. I think it ended up being like at 8 in the morning. So not quite. So 10 hours-ish.
Did she push that long?
Oh, no. God.
45 minutes, hour?
Yeah, an hour probably. I don't know. I was pretty tired. It's hard to remember.
12:15. All right, let's push and see how it goes. Okay, I push once. They're like, stop! Stop! Hold it. And I had to wait for the doctor to get here, push one more time. Molly was born.
So you got a window there where you have some control.
I think that I had, I think I'd have to confirm with Jared because I wasn't like just sitting there watching the tick-tock of the clock. But I think that I waited maybe 10 minutes.
Wow. Okay. That's a little bit so, more than I thought even you would have control. I thought it was just like, no.
But also, you were with my son, I pushed for 45 minutes. He was my firstborn. That situation, I was maybe dilated like 7 to 8 centimeters. I almost said inches. That'd be wild. I can assure you there'd be no more babies after that. Jared'd be like, I'm out.
Oh, man.
7 or 8 inches.
7 or 8 inches.
Centimeters.
I can't do this.
And I had been there for 12 hours. I was so hungry because you can't eat anything. And I was like, give me something.
You can't eat?
No. What if you have to go to surgery?
Yeah.
So you can't eat anything. You can drink clear liquids.
Okay.
So I was like, I need something. I'm starting to feel kind of that nauseous feeling that you get if you get super hungry because I hadn't eaten in, almost a full day at that point. And I was sitting kind of back in my bed and this little cup with a straw of Sprite in it. And I took a sip and I aspirated it. And so I choked and coughed and pushed Charlie into the birth canal.
Whoa.
And so I went from like 7 to 8 centimeters to it's time to push immediately because I was, and while this was all happening, I was still choking. And then I pushed for 45 minutes and he was born.
Wow, all because of a
Sprite.
Crisp, refreshing Sprite.
There's a little more involved in that, but yeah.
Well, I'll just remember that part. For the future, I think it's going to be a great reference.
I don't know how that would work, but...
Not sure yet either, but we're going to work Sprite into giving birth.
You know, all of this talk about babies and everything and the message behind... Charlie Kirk says, what is... like? I don't remember the list of it. Maybe, Brad, you remember it, but like, start a family. Find somebody, get married, start a family, build a legacy, pass it down. I'm not going to do every show that we do on Charlie Kirk for 3 hours, but there is so much that we are now living in a pre-Charlie Kirk death and post-Charlie Kirk death world. And can you not look at everything that the cultural right is talking about right now? Like, doesn't it look happy? What the right is pushing, like what the right is suggesting is the way to go, the way to be, the way to live, compared to what the, like, why would anybody look at the comparison of these two, what the right is offering culturally and what the left is offering culturally? Like, why would you run to the left? What do they have to offer? I mean, what they have, in my opinion, what the left culturally, I'm not talking politically, I'm talking culturally, what the activist left has to offer, the loudest voices, the influencers on the left, what they have to offer is immediate gratification that is so fleeting that you need the next immediate gratification immediately in order to sustain the hit and the high of that type of lifestyle.
Culture and spirituality are crossing into politics in a way that I've never seen before. And I love it. I think it needs to happen because a lot of the arguments that we make about politics come from a deeper place. Mm-hmm. And so seeing these things happen, what you're saying though about it being, I think the word I would use is hopeful. It's more hopeful, a little deeper, that you're looking to something that's beyond just immediate gratification. It's funny because I do think all of that does apply to the right, if you want to put it that way, but it's almost like in spite of Trump, because he is such a fighter and he's always, he's just ready to rumble all the time.
He was at the memorial. Mm-hmm. He did not bring the gospel to the memorial. I also don't think he needed to, but he didn't.
And so he being kind of the torchbearer right now for the Republican Party is odd because I don't think, it's like the rest of this exists in a bubble around him because he's not that, Mm-mm. but he is at the center of it.
And he's there because of the cultural right.
Yes.
They chose him.
It's a strange place to be. Because you could make the argument that all the things we're talking about, well, that doesn't apply because Donald Trump. And you'd have to go, well, I kind of agree. Donald Trump isn't that. But it's like he's walked in and just started swinging and bulldozing and created the space for that.
I think that somebody here, I'm going to read Andy's comment. I don't really like the far left offered. And Andy is a frequent commenter on our YouTube channel, and he is of the left, which is absolutely fine and welcome. He said, I don't really like the far left's offer, but also not interested in the Christian nationalism out of the right. The phrase Christian nationalism is being, that is a mm-hmm. bold-faced vocab word coming out of the Charlie Kirk assassination, this moment right now. Like, maybe it would have been talked about beforehand, but now it is the aggressive label, in my opinion, and out of due respect to Andy, who I appreciate, who comes on and chats from the left on our show chat, but I think that for people who are not Christians, who are not God-fearing people, that they sense the unifying power that exists behind whatever that was. You can call it Christian nationalism, I guess. I don't hear the phrase Christian nationalism and immediately associate it with like terrorist organization, but the Biden administration did. Mm-hmm. So that's already in play. We already see somebody at the highest level, Biden or whoever was running that administration, we have yet to determine. We already know that those people look at the unification of Christians as a great threat to whatever it is that they feel they represent. So is it politics? Is it political power that they fear? If I'm trying to not be inflammatory and if I'm trying to be respectful to Andy, who is, you know, essentially on our chat every day to prove me wrong, which is fine. We appreciate Andy. Andy has shown up at events that we've had and donated to the charity causes that we, like food drives, diaper drives, or whatever. We appreciate Andy, and I want him to stay. But there is a difference between a religious spiritual battle that is taking place and a red-blue political battle that is taking place. And in the essence of knowing that both of those things are going to be power struggles, the power struggle of the Christian or religious or faith-based struggle is as old as time. That is not a new thing. Good and evil, you could talk about, I really do believe you could talk about good and evil in an a-religious sense. I think you don't have to have a religious morality to understand that murdering people is bad. Now, I derive my morality from the Bible, and most of civilized society morality is derived from the Ten Commandments, just as a general rule of thumb of law. And you don't have to necessarily believe in God or a higher power to go through the Ten Commandments, and at least for probably six or seven of them, be like, those are good rules to live by. We would have a more civilized society if we all agreed that the Ten Commandments, or maybe seven of the commandments, if you want to take out the first three that generally speak about keeping the Sabbath and honoring God and not defaming him. The Ten Commandments are a guidepost for us to understand what morality is within and without ascribing ourselves to some sort of religious affiliation. When I hear people say the words Christian nationalism, if I were talking to them one-on-one, I would want to know from them, are you afraid, may be the wrong word. Are you concerned? I'm trying to say this out of the utmost respect to anybody who's listening to the show who is like Andy, who maybe doesn't love everything, because he said he doesn't love what's coming out of the extreme far activist left. But Christian nationalism is a concern to him. Are you concerned when you say Christian nationalism? Are you saying that in a way that is concerned for the religious implications on culture and society? Or are you worried that it's going to rally a bunch of troops and Democrats are going to lose office? Because those are very, very distinctly mm-hmm. different things. Christian nationalism, I mean, if I wanted to use that as a pejorative, where I would place that is with people who are appropriating a Christian faith for clicks, for views, for reach, for some sort of power in a way that was disingenuous and truly blasphemous in that regard, to try to appropriate some sort of Christian belief to who you are so that you can gain some earthly secular power, be it from influencer dollars that you make or from votes. Like if I think that the three of us would probably agree that you can immediately identify when someone is faking the Christian thing.
Oh yeah.
It's not even worth trying, folks, because the people out there who do prioritize their Christian faith, and a lot of them vote Republican, we'll be able to tell immediately if you're using them. That's, to me, where a pejorative of Christian nationalism could come in, where someone's like, well, I'm gonna make sure that we get the Christians in there, and I'm going to use that for my political gain. That's not going to end well for anybody. And it's important for Christians to call that out every time they see it. But I also don't think there's anything wrong with people from a secular standpoint. The Bible talks over and over and over about government structures and earthly law and order and justice. That if we see people who are in high prominence of political earthly governmental power, that they also too can have Christian beliefs and speak on them. And I think with our own intellectual brain cells, a couple that we can rub together there, that we can identify which is an actual foundational element of who those individuals are as people and who's using it. That's where Christian nationalism, to me, can be defined, but also can be jockeyed back and forth.
Yeah.
To a place where it can be used or it can be implemented. I don't think that it is inherently a bad thing.
I don't either. I was going to say the same thing, that I don't necessarily think that the term is bad, but you can tell when people are using it as an attack mm-hmm. on Christianity.
Happy autumn.
Because, dang it.
Go on.
You can tell when they're using it as an attack on Christianity itself, because basically what they're trying to do is say, I'm okay with your Christianity, mm-hmm. but as long as you keep it in a box over there.
That they get to define.
That I can kind of wrap up and keep mm-hmm. it in over here. Then it doesn't affect anything. You basically neuter Christianity so much that it's not Christianity.
That's freedom from religion, not freedom of religion. Yeah. And freedom exactly. from religion is a made-up thing.
And so if you're actually being a Christian, Christian nationalism is a natural outworking, because all of it, everything you believe, affects everything you do, including politics. Shouldn't be the first thing, but it should affect everything. It's your whole worldview.
Let's take a break. Love to hear your thoughts on this. Reading some of the comments here, I had to read this one. Joe says, Ryan is wearing the exact outfit Steve Martin was wearing to coach Little League in Parenthood.
That's cool, dude. Joe, I can be all right with that.
All right. Answer the YouTube live chat poll. Would you support the death penalty for the convicted shooter of Charlie Kirk? Yes or no? We'll be right back.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The rhetoric that Charlie Kirk continuously put out there was rhetoric that specifically targeted people of color. And so it is unfortunate that even our colleagues could not see how harmful his rhetoric was specifically to us. And I can tell you that a month prior to him passing away, he had actually gotten out on his podcast. I wasn't aware of this at the time, but he got out there and he was talking negatively about me directly. So if there was any way that I was going to honor somebody who decided that they were just going to negatively talk about me and proclaim that I was somehow involved in the great white replacement, yeah, I'm not honoring that kind of stuff. The rhetoric.
So there's Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett, Texas Congresswoman, of course, Ledoux fancy school graduate. Nothing wrong with that school, but what is wrong with her? You got to ask yourself that question. Talking about how she would not be a party to honoring Charlie Kirk. I think we could potentially give too much oxygen to the likes of people like Jasmine Crockett. I would say that when stuff like this comes up in the media, it's just red meat for conservative talk radio, isn't it?
Like, yes. In fact, it's almost like she's doing it for conservative talk radio.
Yeah, I bet you there are more conservatives who know who she is than Democrats.
That's possible. Because she doesn't really... If you're a Democrat and you're an intellectual Democrat, she's not speaking like the points that you're trying to make.
She's a flamethrower and she's throwing flames our way so that we'll platform her.
Yes.
So I am opposed to that. And there's a part of me who sometimes feels like it might be malpractice for me to be in a position where I'm talking about these types of things and just skipping over the Jasmine Crocketts and the AOCs and The View. It was really difficult, but I was inclined to skip over Kamala Harris as well because she kind of felt like she was of that camp to begin with. It's difficult to skip over that in a moment right now because I think that if the Democrat Party isn't going to step into this moment and speak over her, then she's speaking for them. So the silence can be deafening. And when Jasmine Crockett is in a position to speak so specifically about this type of thing, I'm just waiting for somebody with cooler head to prevail to just say something a little less inflammatory, but we haven't seen it yet. Let's get to our guest. Chad Pergram joins us now, senior congressional correspondent for Fox News. It's such an honor to always be able to have Chad update us on these types of events. Chad, thank you for being with us today. It's good to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What can you tell us about the goings on Capitol Hill, specifically in the House? They tried to acknowledge Charlie Kirk, and it just didn't seem like it was as easy as it should have been.
Yeah, well, they certainly voted to do so. They voted to honor him. More than 300 members, that's a wide swath of people voted to honor him. But usually when we have these types of votes, especially after somebody who's been shot, assassinated, murdered, people from both sides vote yes. You certainly saw that back in June after the two Minnesota state lawmakers who were assassinated. You know, the House voted 424 to nothing to honor them.
Hmm.
Well, Kirk was a little bit of a different story here. I mean, if you put together the Democrats who voted no, 58, the Democrats who voted present, 38, and the 22 Democrats who did not vote at all, that gets you to 55% of the House Democratic Caucus who did not vote in favor of honoring Charlie Kirk. And, you know, Tom Emmer, the majority whip from Minnesota, he said he was dumbfounded by this. He said this should just be a layup. Steve Scalise, the majority leader, he said, you know, this kind of shows you where the left is. And you've had people who have been outspoken. I thought it was notable that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who, you know, sometimes lays a little bit low, but has been a little more energized of late. People have speculated maybe she wants to run for president. Maybe she wants to challenge Chuck Schumer for the Senate, or if he steps aside or steps down, and we can talk about government funding and her position, you know, kind of the internecine politics in the Democratic Party about that in a moment. But she took to the floor after the vote and explained her position. She thought that the shooting was horrific, thought it was terrible, spoke about Kirk's widow and his children, but said, you know, we don't think that he should have been honored, and here's why. She cited Jim Crow comments from her perspective, bigotry. I mean, she had a whole laundry list of things. And you mentioned Jasmine Crockett, and she had kind of done the same thing. She says, look, I'm a civil rights lawyer, and he did not advocate on behalf of civil rights. And I'm not going to vote on somebody, you know, to honor somebody like that. Some Democrats would say to you privately that they thought this was a trap. They were kind of being backed into this. I don't know that that's the case, but you have to take an up or down vote. And sometimes I should note that Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic leader, he voted yes. He voted to honor Charlie Kirk. And there were many other top, you know, flight Democrats who did so. but some took issue with the nature of the resolution or how it was written or the idea that it was honoring somebody and citing things that they just did not believe were true about him. And sometimes in Congress, and hear this the right way, you have a vote like that that's set up, and maybe it is a trap laid by the other side, maybe it's not. But sometimes, it's not a bill that's going to the president's desk or something, you know. You just kind of slickly go along and vote yes, and then everybody forgets about it because you're like, you know what, say you had a handful of people that voted no, not 58. Say you had a handful. That stands out more than everybody else. So sometimes you're like, okay, I'll just vote, and then people will leave me alone, even if you don't feel that. I mean, hey, you know, you are elected to take these votes like this, and sometimes you want to be out there and take a tough vote and say, this is why I voted no or oppose that, or I'm one of the few people who voted yes. And sometimes you're like, you know what, we need to lower the temperature in this time of crisis. We've had an assassination. Let's just try to calm things down. Let's honor him and go on to something else. We have to fund the government, for instance.
Yeah, certainly. Either way that they would vote on that, they would be accountable to their constituents. And it's their constituents' responsibility to be educated to say, I support what you did there. I absolutely don't support what you did there on that particular vote.
And if I can interject there, not to interrupt, I'm sorry. But, you know, that is the flip side of this. If you think about the district that, say, Crockett or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez represents, these are left-leaning districts. Okay, no surprise there. And that may very well be the position, even though some people might find it offensive, of the people in their district. And if they were to vote the other way on that, there's some other members who might be able to get away with this more so than others, if you get what I'm saying here.
Sure.
But you represent a hard left district like that, where many of their constituents might have found, for right or wrong, Charlie Kirk to be radioactive, then, you know, there would be something to pay back home if they voted to honor him.
Mm.
So, you know, I do think members generally vote their districts. You might not like it, but that might be where their districts are.
Yeah, certainly that is the nature of the House of Representatives and each of those representatives to be accountable to those specific districts. Mm-hmm. Let's move over to the Senate a little bit. You have a very, very good viewpoint of how these bodies function differently from one another. John Fetterman has come out, a senator from Pennsylvania, Democrat. And I think the tweet in off the top of my head that he posted this weekend was like, let's take the day off and let the people who love Charlie Kirk mourn. He's been a little bit of what I would consider to be a voice of reason. Is that your understanding of the sentiment? Are there two camps in the Democrat Party right now surrounding Charlie Kirk, bringing the temperature down, how to approach what comes
certainly
next?
And again, look at somebody like Fetterman, somebody who represents a swing state. It's a state that he represents that, he was considered to be hard left and maybe, you know, a progressive some time ago. You know, he has ditched the party on a number of issues. And if you think maybe where the state of Pennsylvania is, I was talking about a narrow congressional district in New York City versus a sprawling state like Pennsylvania. Well, President Trump carried, maybe that's kind of where the people were on that, if you're John Fetterman, even if you might disagree. He didn't imply that he disagreed. But that's why he's been willing to buck his party on a number of things, be it that or maybe funding the government. He said on Friday, he said, well, you know, he said, I'm voting for funding the government. He said, because even if you thought that the conspiracy here was to have, you know, if you listen to the furthest left wing reaches of the Democratic Party, that, you know, the autocrats are going to take over, why would you vote to shut the government so they would have control, is basically what he said. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm for avoiding a government shutdown, even if that's not the premise necessarily. So he does kind of take a different marching order. I think it just comes from John Fetterman. He's not always a reliable Democratic vote. You know, there's always some folks like that Rand Paul of Kentucky. You never quite know on certain issues, certainly libertarian issues. He was outspoken against the FCC chairman. He did not vote for the funding bill the other day. He's probably with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on vaccines. You see how, you know, you can kind of hopscotch around there on a number of different issues. And, you know, Nancy Pelosi years ago, when she was Speaker of the House, she described politics, especially internal politics in a party, as being like a kaleidoscope. And, you know, and you're rotating like that tube you have. And so it's constantly changing. And she said the person who might be your enemy today or be opposed to your issue today maybe is your ally tomorrow. And you're, because that's constantly changing and morphing and altering depending on the issue. And I think that's very reflective of where we are on those issues. Mm-hmm. But the one thing, and you said it a moment ago, Annie, they cannot lower the temperature very well here. They could, but there's no thermostat in Congress. There are thermometers, and they are all thermometers of their district, of their states. And unless they take an ardent approach to say, we are going to cut the rhetoric, we're going to cut the white hot, you know, yelling at each other. You know, there was things that Ilhan Omar said or retweeted about Charlie Kirk. And then Nancy Mace of South Carolina tried to sanction her, you know, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. They, you know, if they would just on both sides back that off. But guess what? They never do this. They didn't do this. I can give you chapter and verse since the late 1990s. If they weren't going to do that after January 6th, if they weren't going to do that after Steve Scalise was shot, if they weren't going to do that after 9/11, if they weren't going to do that after Gabrielle Giffords was shot, then guess what? They're not going to do it. Mm.
Chad Pergram speaking with us right now, the senior congressional correspondent for Fox News. I mean, what I hear you say, which is should be empowering for our listeners here in the St. Louis bi-state region in Missouri and southern Illinois, is that if anything is going to change, it's going to have to come from the actual districts that these people represent, the states that they represent in the Senate. I've heard people talk about John Fetterman and like, oh, he's going to switch parties. He's been pretty adamant. I'm not switching parties. He just disagrees with the Democrat Party from time to time.
Yes, Israel, a few other issues. Absolutely. Yeah. And both parties always have somebody like that who stands out. Thomas Massie of Kentucky on the Republican side. He's somebody who's like that. You had Zell Miller, who was the senator from Georgia. I had been governor of Georgia, you know, spoke at the Republican convention. You had Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut, who died about a year and a half ago or so, you know, lost the Democratic primary and won as an independent. You have Lisa Murkowski, who routinely bucks her party on a lot of things, you know, is not very pleased with some of these spending cuts and things as they pertain to Alaska. I think that that's just natural. You know, that's always the challenge. And you know why it is, underscored more right now? It's a little bit different in the Senate because this is not that strange a majority, 53-47, that you have in the Senate for the Republicans right now, because it's all about the math. Somebody told me that one time, Annie. It's all about the math. But we have had for quite a while now, several different cycles, a really narrow margin in the House. And usually you had cushion in the House. And so those people who voted no, yeah, they, you know, it didn't stand out as much. But now you need every single vote. And so that accentuates these differences, these internal differences in both parties, more so in the House than the Senate, though. Mm.
Well, Chad Pergram speaking with us right now. Since we've set the table and taken the temperature from the outside, not being able to cool it down, how in the world do we get a budget passed at this point? How does that going
to
happen?
To avoid a government shutdown, and to be clear, a budget is different than avoiding a government shutdown.
True.
A budget is where you the president sends a resolution to Congress and says, this is what we propose spending. And budgets don't become law. These are appropriations. What they have to do is they have to fund the 12 areas of the government by next Tuesday night at 11:59 p.m. That's September 30th, or the government shuts down. This might be as bad a one as I've seen in a while, and I don't know for sure if the government's going to shut down, because we always get to this point in the year and you don't quite have a way out of this cul-de-sac. I don't see that yet, but there are some operational things that are very different this time. The House is gone, period. In fact, the House was supposed to come back early next week, and they, you know, cut that off their calendar. They said, we're going to come back the week of October 7th. They passed their bill to fund the government, just to reopen keep the government open at the current spending levels. These are the old Biden-era spending levels, which some Republicans embrace because you're not adding more money. So even though it's a Biden-era spending level, de facto, it's a cut, if you follow me there.
Sure.
So that's part of it. And then so they passed their bill, sent it to the Senate. The Senate blew up both the House Republican bill and the Democratic bill. And I should note that the Senate Republican bill, or the House Republican bill in the Senate, didn't even get a majority over there. There were a lot of absences and everything else. So read into that what you want. But the Senate is not back until next Monday. You don't have enough track to work this out unless they get an agreement now behind the scenes, bring the Senate back on Wednesday, Thursday. They won't do it Wednesday because Rosh Hashanah begins at sundown tonight and runs through Wednesday night, sundown. That's why they're out of session right now. Come back over the weekend. You could do that. You still got to get some agreements. But right now, I mean, this is as bad as we have seen it ever in recent years, since the government shutdown, the lengthy one in 2018 into 2019, because of just the operational things. You can't, if they ain't here, they can't pass a bill. And they demonstrated that they could not pass a bill in the Senate to sync up with the House, and the House is making it a take-it-or-leave-it proposition.
Is there a party that's going to be able to make more political hay over a shutdown?
You know what? Every time we have a government shutdown, the other party, the party who feels like it's the other one that's really shutting them down, they always say, oh, they're going to pay. I have never seen any political repercussions of a government shutdown. You have them in the macro sense. And this happened to Newt Gingrich and the Republicans in the mid-90s, is that Bill Clinton kind of won those government shutdown fights with Newt Gingrich when he was Speaker, and they viewed it as the Republicans were – it was chaotic. You know, you certainly saw that maybe in a few other – Ted Cruz and the government shutdown over Obamacare in 2013. But nobody goes to the polls and says, I'm going to pull the lever the other direction because they shut down the government. And so this brings me back to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Because Chuck Schumer, what his decision was in March, was to provide votes on the Democratic side of the aisle, because you got to get 60 votes to overcome a filibuster. Okay, in this case, you're going to have to do it twice. He provided the votes because he thought that shutting down the government in March, when they were dealing with Doge and Elon Musk, that would create more problems. Now, Schumer was criticized, as much criticism as I have ever seen heaped on him, because he got nothing out of the deal. And so now people are saying, is he the right man for the job? And this is the whole thing on the Democratic side of the aisle that they have to show to their base that they're, quote, fighting, whatever they deem as fighting enough. And so maybe secretly, maybe they kind of want a government shutdown, too, frankly. You don't really have two sides that are willing to engage right now. And because of the internal politics that Schumer and the Democratic Party is wrestling with, that doesn't make it, you know, convenient for them or really an opportunity, something they want to engage in.
It seems like chaos is congressional currency these days. To think that chaos used to be the thing that you wanted to avoid, I don't know what we would do if things were in order. It just doesn't seem like that's the way that Congress
functions.
They
do chaos really well here. They really do. I mean, I remember the first day they came back after the recess. They had this lengthy recess in August and into, you know, second day of September. And I came home that night and I was exhausted. And I said to somebody, I said, the last 2 or 3 hours that I was here was utter mayhem. And I said, yeah, because the only thing they do well is chaos sometimes.
Yeah. Well, Chad Pergram, you are so wonderful at bringing it into a place where we can all come to a focus on what they're doing. And we're always grateful that you're able to fit us into your schedule. Thank you for being with us again today.
My pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Chad Pergram, the senior congressional correspondent for Fox News on X at Chad Pergram. A must follow. He also has a newsletter out that I think you can get, and it is detailed. I really appreciate it. If when you're trying to figure out what's going on in Congress, I kind of wish Congress would read it. Maybe that would help. Thank you, Chad Pergram, for being with us today. All right, quick break. YouTube live chat poll. Would you support the death penalty for the convicted shooter of Charlie Kirk? Yes or no? Let's discuss that with the crew when we come back. We'll read some of your comments on this particular question, where you can go to YouTube, just open your YouTube app on your phone or on your computer, youtube.com, type in Annie Frey, F-R-E-Y, and you'll see that we're broadcasting live right now when you find our channel. There's a live chat to the live broadcast every day. And when you log in there, you're going to be able to see that poll question asking if you'd support the death penalty for the convicted shooter of Charlie Kirk. You can vote. If you subscribe to the channel, after 5 minutes passes, you can leave a comment as well. Storm says the death penalty is in direct conflict with Charlie Kirk's message. I wonder if you agree with that. We'll take a break and be right back. Don't go away. Pour me a
drink. Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly outside of Cleveland, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you see the? Is this Ace Ventura 2? The song, is it?
Is that what you think of when you hear The Lion Sleeps Tonight?
Yes, that or Lion King.
Is that song in The Lion King?
They sing it. Timon and Pumbaa.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Well, they're hunting bugs.
Yes.
Slugs.
Yep. That's a way to get around the weird dynamic of a anthropomorphic cartoon is to not have them eat each other and just eat bugs. That's what I always thought when I saw that scene.
Do Pumbaas eat animals? I know they
could
be.
Lions do.
Well, the lions still in Lion King eat other animals.
Do they? I don't remember. It's been a long time since
I've
seen that movie.
Do you not know The Lion King? You're going to Disney World on Thursday and you don't know The Lion King?
On Sunday, we're going to go to Animal Kingdom and I'm going to have to watch the live version of it to see if they eat each other.
The Lion King show at Animal Kingdom?
Yeah.
They do not. I'll just give you that. But there's a fire thrower. It's pretty cool.
Do they eat live animals?
The whole point of Simba and his ironic friendship with Timon and Pumbaa is they teach him how to eat bugs, which are slimy yet satisfying, which is not something a lion would do, which is why it's of interest.
I'm looking this up right now.
The Lion King? It was 1994. The movie is 31 years old.
Pumbaa is a warthog.
He was a young warthog.
Hogs eat meat. Yes, they do. Though they are primarily herbivores. But they will eat meat. Yes, that doesn't really answer that, because then we're both right.
Can we talk about something else?
Nope.
Harris's book. You talked about this a little bit. We talked about it last weekend or week, but the Kamala Harris book, people are saying that this is the end of her political career. She's had the most ends of her political career that I've ever seen a politician have. I don't know why this would be the nail in the coffin when she was somehow appointed to be the nominee for Joe Biden's absence. And there has to be the only way to make sense of the Kamala Harris anointing was essentially she got to have the war test that Joe Biden and she raised together during the campaign, because it was the Biden-Harris. If Joe Biden steps out, the only way that anyone else would have access to those funds is if they blessed it. And if do we believe that Joe Biden was run out?
Yes.
Is there any question about that?
Well, yes, there's question. But
Joe Biden tweeted out that he was not going to run for office again.
Well, we think Joe Biden tweeted it.
He auto-penned it.
Somebody tweeted it from his account.
I want to know that story. I want to know who typed the words and who was in the room when they were typed, the words that Joe Biden put on that X post. He announced it on Elon Musk's platform.
I think we know.
You know why? Because that's where people would have read it.
75% of that story. There's still 25 that were like,
the 25% is the interesting part.
But I think there's a lot with the Clooney's getting involved and the Obamas all kind of, you know, colluding, if you want to put it that way, to push him out through public pressure.
I don't know that specifically the Clooney's. What he did was he just said out loud what everybody was thinking, and he had to have been thinking already. He just said it out loud.
Yeah.
I'm not a George Clooney apologist, but I don't think him being like, I don't know if he's up for the job publicly, is like collusion.
Well, but nobody.
It's just honesty.
But it was a big moment because nobody would say it. Everybody could see it, and nobody would say it.
Nobody,
and it took George Clooney.
Not nobody would say it. Okay. None of them would say it.
None of the big players would say it.
In the Democrat Party,
yes.
Who have power to throw around. There is not a moment. I can't think of a single moment in Joe Biden's presidency where I felt like he'd led.
No, I can't either.
Not a single one. Do you remember when he went to Independence Hall flanked by two Marines with the strangest red-lit background and basically declared war on MAGA Republicans? How did we get to this moment in time? Do you ask yourself that? How do we get to the moment in time where Charlie Kirk is sitting at a university in super red Republican Utah? And he dies because he thinks wrong? He speaks the wrong things? If Joe Biden was not in command, maybe, the whole time, the way we think he wasn't, who put Joe Biden up to that? I don't believe that Joe Biden went and delivered that speech and had any idea what he was doing. I don't think he understood what it looked like. I don't think he understood what it sounded like. I think Joe Biden was doing what he was told. The president of the United States was doing what he was told. Who was telling him what? Those are all important questions that need to be answered. And you know, I wrote it down when Chad Pergram said regarding Congress, like, how do you turn the temperature down? That's what everybody keeps saying. I don't know. Gosh, yeah, am I a homer? Maybe. It doesn't feel to me like the right. Maybe let me edit myself while I'm talking about this. Who on the right needs to tone the temperature down? Does Nancy Mace, does Marjorie Taylor Greene, are there other elected people who have positions of power who are inflammatory?
Well, there's most people who hate Trump would say Trump, but that's why Trump got elected.
Yeah, he's the most, so, like, people picked him. Well, and I don't think he says the inflammatory things that people accuse him of saying. Like, I don't look at him as an inflammatory figure the way the left looks at him like that. They hate him. They despise him. They think that he's something that he really isn't because they've been deceived for a very long time to think that he's responsible for so many different things or was a party to so many different things that were complete and total abject lies.
Yeah, but he embraces it. I mean, he's fine with being that guy.
With being what guy?
With being the guy that takes the heat, that is hated.
He doesn't have a choice.
He pushes the buttons. He puts the 2028 on a hat, you know, that kind of stuff.
But putting 2028 on a hat is not incendiary.
No, but he's leaning into it, though. He pushes the buttons, and he's fine with it. And everybody knew it going into this term.
Yeah, I don't think pushing buttons is the same as inflammatory language. I think that we have to be able to have political battles, especially in campaigns where you'd get to defend yourself and you get to fight back without taking it to a level that includes violence. And I don't think Donald Trump has anything to do with inciting violence, especially when bullets are flying at his head. Let's talk more about it next. Don't go away.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.